The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Football Manager Show by The Athletic, the podcast that tried to be a wonderful servant to the club and hopes to be welcomed back any time. Yes, it's the last show of season two, and indeed for the foreseeable future. We are red-hearting, we've given all we've got, but we'll be back. To address a few concerns from social media, no, we've not been cancelled by our overlords, it's just a question of time. The Euros are fast approaching, our department needs to switch focus, look out for some amazing podcasts in the next few weeks, and don't unsubscribe, because we've only got another 6 months or so until FM22, and someone's got to spread the word, right? So, what have we got for a final episode? Well, we've got a top 10 of things we've learned, we've got our favourite letters, and we'll be catching up on the FM Bundesliga Challenge with Alex Stewart. Don't worry, to the best of my knowledge, that feature's going nowhere. Let's get started. Okay, we asked you on Twitter this week what were the most important things that you learnt from this podcast. And to help me work my way down the list, producer Abby.
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
So, in at number 10, Sunderland. An interesting place to start. Paul Wadland says, I learned that managing a construction site is much easier than managing Sunderland.
Oof.
Not the only one to have this advice. James Finley writes to say, I was offered a job as Sunderland manager after a successful stint with a National League League Two team. This podcast inspired me not to take the job, and now we are promoted to League One. Thank you.
I do what I can with what I've got. You can't argue with any of this. Sunderland is one of the hardest places to start. If you go back and listen to some of those early episodes, you can really smell the optimism, and then by about episode 5-6, it starts to go wrong, and you can really taste the despair. That football club is cursed, and after two real-life months of managing the seniors, the reserves, the kids, I was unceremoniously sacked before I'd even finished a season. But in the words of Winston Churchill, success is the ability to go from one failure to another without ever losing enthusiasm. Clearly, that man played Football Manager.
Let's go to number 9. There is no magic formation. DB writes in to say, the magic tactic of 4-1-3-2 from Championship Manager 01-02 will get you sacked if you just sit back and use it every week.
Yes, this is one of the biggies. So many people, of course, playing these games who played the older ones, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now, the old games, if you got things right, they were kind of just like bonsai tree management. Like a little bit of careful pruning. That was all that was required. You just set up your perfect formation and rode it into the distance for years and years and years. Now, those days aren't completely gone. You don't have to tear everything down and build it back up again every week. I've consistently used a 4-3-3 fluid counterattack for two seasons with Marseille and finished second twice, which is basically finishing first in France. But I've made little changes. Like I mix up my set pieces. I occasionally alter player roles. I've got two versions of the same tactic, one a little more conservative than the other. And, you know, in fairness, it's France. There's one really, really good team, three teams at my level, and then 15 interchangeable no marks that you should never drop points against. But at the higher levels, particularly the Premier League, against the best managers, you need to keep on your toes. You just can't keep pressing continue on this game.
Number 8, backup plans. Phil Martin writes in to say, have a backup plan for when the wheels come off. Something you know about, Ian.
Oh, too well. Phil got in touch, actually, wrote a lovely series of messages about the unprecedented success that he's enjoyed in the Irish game because of this podcast. And one of the lessons is to have backup tactics. Now, this certainly saved me with Schalke. Having a real deep-lying 5-3-2 helped me out in an injury crisis, made it very, very difficult for anyone to score against me. Wasn't the sort of thing I wanted to do all season, but it kept me secure at the back, and then we just pretty much played for set pieces and snatched points where we could. Multiple tactics, albeit mostly under the same sort of style, are key. As I've said, I've got two versions of my Marseille tactic, one positive and one cautious. But I also have a backup defensive plan for seeing out the last 5 minutes of tight games. Another option is to spend weeks in training working out a brand new tactical plan, just in case you need it, so that when you do hit the skids, you can ring the changes but not suffer from those unfamiliarity penalties. So always worth giving that a go.
Indeed. Number 7, positions and roles. Tim Taylor says, the show on the difference between positions and roles came in at just the right time for me.
Yeah, again, another big change for the more recent versions of the game. In those older ones, you pretty much just went 4-4-2, a couple of good strikers. There were little alterations you could make, but not too much. Now, with so many player roles, you have to think how every player will work independently and how they'll work together with other players. But it can be really useful because it can enable you to get good players out of people who don't particularly look like good players. So yeah, if you've got a big useless lummox in your squad, well, maybe he'll be less useless as a supporting target man. Or if you've got a forward who's got vision and passing but maybe isn't the best in front of goal, deep-lying forward. And so it goes on. It's choosing between 3-5-2 and 4-4-2 or whatever is only the first decision of many that you'll make.
Oof. Number 6, keep it simple. Neutral Nigerian, I'm guessing is how that's pronounced, says, go easy on the team instructions. Don't overload your players with information.
Yeah, this came out one of the early episodes. Such a simple thing, but can be so important. Always try and think of your players as real people. If you give someone loads and loads of instructions, there's a risk they're not going to remember everything. I think it's really important to play your friendly matches. Don't just skip through them and just build up slowly. Pick your overarching plan that suits your players. One really good thing is just to do what they do in real life if they're doing it well. Right? Don't pick up Man City and change them to a long ball team. Just keep it simple and pop them into position, watch the games, and then tweak as you go. So slowly build it up. You learn so much from watching the game as well. Little things like changing a winger from supporting to attacking, if you sense they can beat their man and get to the byline, stopping your defenders from being ball-playing defenders if you realise they can't kick in a straight line. But always start from a simple position.
Into the top 5 now. Number 5, interconnected tactics. James Fawcett says, if I change one player role, I look at the whole team to see how they will be affected.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite things about the recent games, particularly with fullbacks. So if you've got an attacking fullback, don't have an attacking winger in front of him because they'll both want to do the same thing. You won't really get any benefits from it. But if you get your winger to cut in and then tell your fullback to attack and overlap, now all of a sudden you're going to find yourself overloading the opposition on one side. Now, you know, can your fullback cross accurately? Have a look at what sort of crosses you want and have a look at what sort of striker you've got. If you've got a big powerhouse striker, then get that fullback to float in crosses. That striker can rise above the defence like an attack helicopter. And so it goes on. Everything relates to everything else, as we'll touch on later.
Spoilers. Number 4, player traits. Joe Kiddle says, didn't bother looking at them before.
Yep, guilty as charged. And it's such a multiplier. Look at what your players like doing and see if you can get them to do it. At the very least, look at what your players like doing and avoid telling them to do the opposite. So if you've got a man who likes playing short, simple passes, don't have him directing like hoddle-like killer balls across the pitch. Equally, if someone likes playing killer balls and you've got a quick striker who likes lobbing the keeper, link it all up and watch it go. It all goes back to viewing your players as real people rather than little collections of numbers. So it can be tempting to see a striker with 18 finishing as an upgrade on a striker with 16 finishing. But always look at what sort of striker it is. What sort of football do you play? What sort of things do they do? Sometimes it's better just to have the right tool for the job, to think about the collective. And those player traits are a really good way of figuring out what sort of person you've got playing for you.
Into the top 3, and in at number 3, it is set pieces. So many people got in touch about this. Phil says, setting up a variety of set piece routines has been the key to my success in the League of Ireland. FM Cheetah, by far the most practically applicable episode. It's improved all of my saves. Colin, worked on set pieces, game changer. Rory Stewart, possible former London Mayor candidate, we don't know. Set pieces have been my eureka moment. And Dean Mitchell, I now feel guilt and not doing my set pieces in the past.
I think in terms of sheer number of messages, this has been the most popular aspect of the podcast and the advice we've given. It turns out, thanks to a special Steam badge, that 98.6% of us didn't have a set piece plan for every occasion. And I kind of wonder what percentage didn't have a set piece plan for any occasion. Now, it is a bit of a pain in the bum. You start your save and you just want to play matches. But honestly, take 15 minutes or so and just do all of your set pieces. We have had so many messages from so many people who can see the difference in just a few matches. And also, save your set pieces. Firstly, because if you're the kind of person who needs 5 or 6 run-ups before they settle into a save, you'll thank me later. But also because you want to freshen these up every now and then. If you go near post all the time, as some of us are guilty of, they'll put their biggest defenders at the near post. They'll neutralise you. So have a short option, have a near post option, have a far post option. Get them all set, get them all saved. I swear to you, you'll be picking up 5-10 points more every season.
And speaking of near post options, number 2, near post corners. KB88 says, I owe you a thank you, Ian. Won the league and cup double with Villarreal in season 1, and Pau Torres, my handsome centre-back, weighed in with 11 goals thanks to the near post corner routine I stole from you.
Oh, you didn't steal it. I gave it away quite happily. Again, so many of these messages, not everyone's been quite as successful as Kane, because that's outstanding to do that in the first season. But loads of people have got in touch to say how well this routine has worked. So here it is one more time. First of all, like everything else, you need the right players. And secondly, it won't work week in, week out for those reasons explained earlier. But for whatever it's worth, here it is. 1. Get a good corner taker to take corners directed at the near post. So far, so simple. 2. Put your best headerers, and that is a word, at the near post. Usually it's your centre-backs, but, you know, check everyone. You're looking for anyone who's sort of 6'2" plus, good jumping and heading stats. 3. If you haven't used strikers at the near post, so you've got smaller strikers, put them at the far post. Because if the AI is man-marking your strikers, they'll send their best men to follow, and that will possibly leave weaker markers precisely where you're putting the ball. 4. If you've got a 5'5" good-for-nothing in this sort of scenario player, tell him to go short. The AI might send someone to mark him, and that means one fewer player in the box. 5. Make sure you leave someone on the edge of the box in case the corner's cleared. Someone who's good at long shots, ideally. 6. Make sure you have at least 2 players back on the halfway line, ideally quick players who can stop a counter-attack. Now, you can use wingers for this, because all they've got to do is get to the ball first. 7. Final piece of advice. Make sure that none of those players you've left back on the halfway line are on your list of preferred corner takers, because if injuries or substitutions force that player to step up and take the corner, you'll find yourself with only one man back on the halfway line. And trust me, from bitter experience, that's not enough.
Sound advice there, but what has come in at number 1? What is the thing that you should have on a post-it note next to you as soon as you open up Football Manager? Well, this comes from Gusty and from Daniel, and it is the mantra of Football Manager. Everything is connected to everything.
Oh, yes. We said it in the first episode, and I think we said it in every episode, and we'll end the series by saying it again. Everything is connected to everything. It's not like the old games. It's not just a question of finding 11 good players, putting them in a good formation and pressing continue for the rest of the night. Ask yourself at the start of the save, what am I trying to do here? And when you've done that, ask yourself how you're going to do it. And then keep those things in mind when it comes to almost every major decision. If you're trying to build a team that plays glorious passing football, check first that you have players who can pass a football. Check for players with vision, decision-making, first touch, and so on. Remember that this kind of style requires work on the training field. So make sure you've got coaches and facilities equal to the task. Technical coaches, very, very important. Keep an eye on training. You don't have to micromanage everything if you don't want to, but don't be afraid to throw in a few extra sessions to further develop skills or ways of playing. Like if you're playing with an overlap, do some overlap training. Check your reserves and youth teams for players who can pass, because you'll need them later. Scout for players who can pass. You need improvements all the time. Don't sign people just because they've got high average ratings. Sign them because they can play the sort of football you want. Then you'll get high average ratings when they're playing for you. Watch, at the very least, watch the extended highlights. And when you get possession, press pause and look at your players. What are their passing options? And so on and so on and so on and so on. And remember my favourite Bill Shankly quote, a football team is like a piano. You need 8 men who can carry it and 3 who can play the damn thing. I love it because it makes no sense. When have you ever seen 3 men playing the piano? Outside of that Morecambe and Wise sketch. But ignore that bit and focus on the maxim. To do all of this, to do all of the passing football or whatever plan it is, you need that core, obviously. You need players who can pass in this instance, obviously. But don't forget, you need a goalkeeper who can keep the ball out. You need strong characters with determination and leadership to keep people's heads up. You need someone scary at the back of the midfield to break up the other team's passing. Everything is connected to everything. The minute you start to think of Football Manager less like a video game you're trying to complete and more like a living, breathing environment, that's the minute you'll start to do better. Now look at me. I was complete shit at this game when we started. And now? Well, now I'm mediocre. And that's your top 10 tips for success in Football Manager. Coming up next, your letters. Because you listen to the Football Manager show by The Athletic, you can get a very special deal on a subscription. And why wouldn't you? They literally let me and Alex Stewart play Football Manager and write about it. This is the sort of behaviour that should be encouraged. But it's not just that, of course. It is, quite simply, just the best football writing out there. So type theathletic.com/FMPod now and take advantage. That's theathletic.com/FMPod. Get stuck in.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Football Manager Show with Ian McIntosh.
It's the final batch of letters. Huge apologies if you have written to me and I haven't been able to squeeze you in. We had so many. We always wanted just to read out everything, but it kind of got a little bit out of hand. Abby, what's in the final postbag?
In the final postbag, we turn to Stein Small, who says, I just started listening to episode 21 and I heard the word penultimate. Yeah. It's brought a little sadness with it because for the past weeks, the podcast has brought a lot of happiness. You and your producers put together a wonderful podcast, which invigorated my enthusiasm for the game. Each time I listen to it, I want to get home to start up my game. Twitter and other mediums can be a dark place, don't we know it? But the FM community always seems to shine bright. I wanted to add my piece to it with this letter. It isn't so much a question as much as a recommendation, but it is a sincere thank you. I wish you quieter neighbours so your daughter doesn't find herself without a room from time to time and a European spot with Schalke and some golden fullback talent in your youth intake. That's very nice.
Oh, that's a lovely letter. Thank you so much. And I can only echo those comments about the FM community. I think I was on Twitter from 2009 until about 2018 and saw the way it went from a very friendly, collaborative place to a kind of scorched hellhole. But the FM community seems to have ridden it out. I don't know if I'm only just seeing the nice bit of it, but we've never had a negative message. We've never had anything nasty or snide. It just looks like loads and loads of people who really enjoy the game, all helping each other out. And it is a lot like Twitter from sort of 2009, 2010. It's been wonderful. In terms of quieter neighbours, I'm moving house in a month. Woo-hoo. So, you know, if and when we come back and whatever the situation is at the time, should be much quieter recording conditions and I won't be recording in a small room filled with teddy bears. Unless, you know, life goes very differently.
Bring them to the studio.
Let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who else have we got?
We have got Hein, who says, hi, Ian. I'll start off by saying thank you so much to you and the team for a brilliant couple of seasons. Genuinely my favourite podcast to listen to and is a prominent feature on my daily dog walks. Love that. I have enjoyed the series and I've learned so much. I've even re-listened to episodes just in case I missed a crucial bit of gold. Every time I feel like I learned something new. And he has been doing very well on FM, has Hein. He says that, you know, cut to the chase. He just wants to know, how do you keep motivated and keep things fresh for a long-term save?
Well, thank you very much, Hein. That's a really kind letter. Also, you know, I haven't read the full details of what you've done. Sounds like you're having an amazing save. He's basically won everywhere he's gone and just moved from country to country, picking up major titles.
Is he trying to do that ultimate FM challenge that you spoke about?
It looks like he's done like the hard bit already. I can only dream of this sort of success. In terms of trying to keep yourself fresh, I know it sounds really weird, but whenever I finish a season, I have about a week or so off the game completely. I just go off and play Civilization VI or Europa Universalis or something. Just give yourself a complete break and then come back fresh and it will feel like a whole new challenge. The key I've found over the years to avoid is to not finish the season and then try and plow through all of the summer and pre-season and start the new season all in the same session, because you'll basically rush it, you'll forget to do loads of stuff, and it'll be a massive anticlimax when you find yourself just like four games through the season. So give yourself a break and come back fresh.
Also helps you stave off the addiction to the game as well, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have a little break every now and then.
Absolutely. Now, this next one comes in from Sam Freebody, and I will stop myself from doing an Australian accent.
You're never going to be able to stop yourself.
I really won't. I grew up on Neighbours, damn it. He says, a few weeks late to the greatest ever New Gen conversation, but I was catching up on the podcast and had to get my answer in. I'm not sure if FM handheld is cheating, but as a teenager, it's all I could play without a PC. I was 17 odd seasons into dominating Asia with my Melbourne Victory side on FMH13, as I pushed to make Australia a dominant nation. My manager was Flaming Al Flaming Stewart. I did it. After the Neighbours character, and I was shocked to see a young man by the name of Ross Flaming Stewart pop into my side. My very own son. He was reasonably average stats-wise, but the man was like Divock Origi on steroids when it came to big games.
Wild horses couldn't have stopped you doing that accent. I'm fairly sure Al Flaming Galah Stewart is off Home and Away, though. I don't want to get into a kind of antipod soap opera.
Watching him on Neighbours, but this might have been before my time.
I'm more of the Mrs. Mangle generation.
That's
God,
not me.
What a woman. What a classic.
Though Harold
beak.
Was still around.
Ah, Harold. Didn't he fall off a ship?
Possibly, yeah. I think I stopped watching by that point.
Never remember. I pretty much only watched up to about 1992. Have we got time for one more?
We do, before we descend any deeper into Erinsborough. finally, from Jason Higgins, who says, just wanted to drop a note to tell you how much I've appreciated the pod. I had tried a couple of FM21 saves and gone out over my skis both times, but after listening to the first few episodes of the pod, I decided to put my new Football Manager knowledge to the test. After starting out in the sixth tier of England for a few seasons, finishing mid-table with a side largely expected to be relegated, I moved to Germany and took Dynamo Dresden from the third Liga, I don't know, Einstein Dry, from the Dry Liga, is that what they call it, to the Bundesliga in just two seasons. I currently have West Ham at the top of the Premier League and through to the Europa League knockout stage, doing even better than David Moyes is right now. And so much of my FM success is from the lessons you have shared on the pod. The last thing I would have expected was I'd be listening to a video game podcast, but it really has been a delight.
The last thing I would have expected was to be presenting a video game podcast.
And the last thing I would have expected, no.
Hey! Jason, thank you so much. I'm absolutely delighted. It's been brilliant. Every time we get an email or a tweet from people who say, like, I wasn't enjoying the game, I wasn't doing very well, and now I'm winning stuff and I'm having fun again. It's just been fantastic. And just thank you so much for letting us know. We'll be back after this.
Yo, this is Chuck D, host of Shattered, Hope, Heartbreak, and the New York Knicks. Shattered is a new podcast series from The Athletic. We dive deep into the past 20 years of the Knicks. The Knicks run to the finals in 99. Melodrama, Linsanity, Chris Stapps and Phil Jackson to today. Subscribe to Shattered wherever you get your podcasts.
The Football Manager Bundesliga Challenge.
And now, ending the series in all its glory with nothing for which it should be ashamed, it's the Football Manager Bundesliga Challenge. Alex Stewart, how are you?
I think I've recovered. I think enough time has passed.
The article's up on The Athletic now, so we can safely do this with no fear of spoilers. Alex, did you survive?
Yes, I survived by the skin of my teeth. I took 5 points from the remaining three games, including one very graciously donated by yourself. Clung on to 14th, which was, you know, where I was supposed to be at the beginning of the season. So
amazing, isn't it? 9 months of admittedly simulated football, and you've ended up precisely where you should have ended up.
Pretty much, yes. I mean, I haven't done it in the kind of smooth teleology that I would have liked. It's been up and down and deeply, deeply stressful. But yeah, we landed where we should be.
We had a what would be referred to by a proper football man as a good old-fashioned ding-dong when we met, in which you took the lead for a set piece, and you know how I feel about things like that. And then I equalised for a goal that I was so convinced was offside that I didn't celebrate until the game had restarted. And so I still haven't celebrated now. Then I took the lead for a penalty. Oh, yeah, you should have had a penalty. It was what appeared to be a blatant foul that didn't even get the benefit of VAR.
No.
I got one and took a 2-1 lead. And then you go and equalise with another set piece, that being the only time all season I've conceded two set pieces in a game.
And also the only time in the whole season that Clinton Muller has scored, and he got both. So it was a slightly weird one. And then obviously you had Mark Uth's goal disallowed for offside. So it was, yeah, it was properly back and forth, and quite fun insofar as these things are ever fun, because they are also nerve-shreddingly stressful. So,
and you were set up for the final game of the season, where I'm right in thinking if you won, you'd be fine. If you drew, you would very much rely on other results. And if you lost, you were almost certainly going into the relegation playoff.
Yeah, that's right. So we had a much better goal difference than Hoffenheim and Bielefeld, which were the two other teams I had to be worried about. So a win would guarantee safety, basically, unless there was an absolutely absurd result somewhere else. And yeah, it didn't start well. We went 1-0 down against Werder, and I was really worried. We were at home, but it all worked out okay in the end. The strike partnership of Silas and Sasha Kalajdzic, I think is how you pronounce it, came through for me.
So we're going to have probably a couple of sessions playing in the next week, where it's going to be those sessions where you're pretty much just pressing continue a lot and desperately waiting for transfers to go through. What's your big plan? How are you going to rebuild for season two?
Well, I've already signed Matteus Arezzo, which is really surprising to me, because he's a wonder kid who is one of the highest ranked potential strikers in the whole game. And I've picked him up for 1.7 million, which is a steal from River Plate. So that's fine. I think I'm losing a couple of players who are going back on loan. I think defence, really. Defence is where I need to strengthen more than anything. I also need to settle on a formation and be really kind of comfortable and confident with that, so that I can avoid the chopping and changing that happened a bit last season, some of which was injury enforced. But yeah, so I need to think about that and then work out the key positions.
Yeah, I'm feeling really positive. We didn't get European football, but we finished eighth. And given everything we went through, that was good. And I genuinely believe that I'm only, you know, 12 or 13 players away from a title challenge now.
So. 12 or 13 fullbacks. Yeah.
Just to make sure. I never want to go through what we've been through again. You can read all about that on The Athletic. You'll find links on the Twitter page, which is at FM. What is it?
At FM Pod Athletic.
That's the one.
Yeah.
God, good job standards aren't slipping in the final moments of the show. So find out all about it there. Keep your eyes open, because they will be continuing as we hammer through to the second season, and hopefully no relegation problems. And that is it. And it really is it. But only for now, I'm sure. 22 episodes. We're one emergency goalkeeper short of a World Cup squad. I want to thank everyone at Sports Interactive for sharing their wisdom. Thank you to Abby Patterson and Cornelius Mendes for sharing their production skills. Thank you to Alex Stewart for finishing six places beneath me. And thank you to you, the listener, for the reviews, the tweets, the emails, the messages, and the support. I think one way or another here and when I own Muddy Knees Media, that I've made over 30 podcasts now. The biggest was You're Dead to Me. The most successful was Totally. And the most misguided was the one about musical theatre. And I'm not really ready to talk about that yet. But this show will always be my favourite. Don't unsubscribe. I have a feeling we'll be back again before long. This has been the Football Manager Show by The Athletic. I have been Ian McIntosh. And one day, I will be again.
The Athletic.